2014. The last item on the agenda is House Bill 4125 that adds reserve officer to the category of victims and so on. That bill, we are not going to hear. That's being taken up in an amendment over on the Senate side. All right, open a work session on House Bill 4036. Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair, I move to reconsider the vote by which the motion to report House Bill 4036 to the floor if it do pass as amended recommendation failed.
Representative Barton moves to reconsider the vote by which the motion to report House Bill 4036 to the floor with the do pass as amended recommendation failed. Is there any discussion? The motion before the committee is to reconsider the vote by which the motion to report House Bill 4036 to the floor with the do pass as amended recommendation failed. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Could we please have a recess? I feel like I need to talk with you about this.
Okay. Be in recess for a few minutes.
Off script.
The motion is to reconsider our vote from yesterday.
Right.
Was the bill did the bill have a referral to Ways and Means?
It has. It's going to have a referral to Rules if it passes today.
To Rules.
To Rules. Call the roll, please.
So, excuse me.
I'm sorry.
No, just. So the motion yesterday. What was the motion yesterday?
Can we? Yesterday was to pass the move the bill to the floor with the do pass. It failed.
Okay, so we're reconsidering that motion, not to Rules.
Yeah, that's right. One at a time. Yeah. Right now we're voting to reconsider.
To reconsider the bill, period. And then
oh, to reconsider.
And then
okay.
We'll move.
Right. Aye.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Hicks.
Aye.
Representative Weininger.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Williamson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Barker.
Aye. The motion is adopted. Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4036 be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended and the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 4036 to be reported to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended and the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion?
So, Mr. Chair, this is a different motion that we voted on yesterday. The motion yesterday was to send this bill to the floor.
Yeah.
And the reason we're moving it to Rules instead of the floor, I have an explanation for that.
Okay. So there's concerns about as we had quite a discussion yesterday about exactly what the district attorney is doing with regards to prosecuting these cases. They want to go to Rules, they can continue the discussion with the district attorney. I spoke to him this morning.
Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, is it not that we are in a position to be able to have that discussion with the district attorney from this committee rather than Rules? Because we know the public safety better than Rules, or
this in the short session, it's a matter of time. We've run out of time, and he's not able to be here today. He came in early this morning, but he's not able to be here today. He hadn't, you know, he was unable to attend in the past, so that's
okay.
The purpose. Okay, discussion, please.
I just want to make sure that I'm on the record with the employees of the state hospital saying that we're all very concerned about their safety, and the fact that we're moving this to Rules is to continue that conversation to make sure that they're protected in their work in their workplace.
Okay, thank you.
And I would echo that. I'm very concerned, and I hate false promises to the employees of the work who are doing the work in the Oregon State Hospital. We want to make sure that you get the help that you need.
Okay.
I'm new to the committee, so I don't know all the background on the good work that was done to fund a district attorney position, but it's clear from the testimony yesterday that it's really important to make sure that we keep the employees who work in the state hospital safe and we do it in a manner that's respectful of people who are struggling with mental illness. And I think that the step that we're preparing to take today hopefully conveys the profound concern that we have for the well-being of employees, but also the people who are in the hospital. So thanks.
Thank you. The motion before the committee is, should House Bill 4036 be reported to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended, and be and the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Hicks.
Aye.
Representative Leininger.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Williamson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Chair Barton.
Aye. Motion is adopted. I close the work session of House Bill 4036. Thank you, committee.
And thank you to the good clerk.
Yeah. Open a work session on House Bill 4035.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4035 allows corrections officers employed by the Department of Corrections to lawfully possess a weapon in a locked gun box in their personal vehicle while on DOC property. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you have the Dash 3 amendments in front of you, which supersede the ones and twos and combine with the one. Chair, members of the committee, going to that amendment inserts, notwithstanding any Department of Corrections regulation, rule, policy, or provision of employment contract to the contrary. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one of the problems with the original bill is it really didn't address what was probably at issue here, and that is it's not so much a statutory issue, but an employment issue with the Department of Corrections. Loathe to have the guns there, and they made that part of the conditions of employment. This would address that. It would also overcome the Medford case. Then it goes on, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it substitutes in line 7 firearm for weapon. Current bill talks about weapon. Weapon is used throughout the statute, but it means more than just a firearm, and it's in some regards a little bit clunky. This would be more specific. We're talking about a firearm. Not nunchucks or a sword or anything like that. So Chairman of the committee, and then it deletes line 12 where that talks about in a gun box, and this ties into current law to a certain extent, has secured the firearm in a closed and locked trunk, glove compartment, center console, or other container, and the key is not inserted in the lock. If in the trunk, glove compartment, center console, other container, locks with a key. So Chairman of the committee. And then finally, the Section 3 goes to the issues of impairment of contract. If it's, I don't know if it's in the Department of Corrections contract or policy, whatever, but if it's an employment contract, you can't go back and retroactively change it. You'd have to, you'd be applicable when a new contract came out. But I have talked to Mary Botkin, and there's not an issue of contract. That's the amendment, Mr. Chair. We do not have all the paperwork on this. You could adopt the amendment. But we cannot move the bill today unless you want to suspend the rules.
Okay. What I would like to do today is adopt the Dash 3 amendments, and we'll move the bill tomorrow.
So. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 4035.
Representative Barton moves the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 4035. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Yes.
I have a question. I'm not sure if it's on the amendment, but as I recall, there was some testimony that some of the people who work in corrections in Eastern Oregon actually live in Idaho, and so there is it still in the bill that it's required to have a permit and a concealed
Chair, members of the committee, it's still in the bill. You're required to have a concealed
permit. So how would that affect someone who lives, maybe got that in Idaho and is living in Oregon?
I believe the sheriff on the border counties is able to issue a concealed handgun license to a resident. An Oregon sheriff in that county could issue a permit to an Idaho resident.
That's correct.
And so that would happen before that person would be able to have a gun that is concealed. Is that
Any citizen, you for example, who I assume I don't know,
or she has one.
If you don't have a CHL, you could transport your gun in the car in that manner without having a concealed handgun license. This requires the corrections officers to have the concealed handgun license, so they actually have to do more than an average
citizen. The officer does, but not a private citizen.
No. Okay, yes.
Chairman, members of the committee, where I read it, since it's under pursuant to ORS 166-291 and 166-292, it would have to be an Oregon concealed handgun.
Yeah, so they,
it couldn't be an Idaho one.
It right. could not.
Right.
They have to be in Oregon. Correct. They could have it issued in, by the sheriff in
on the county.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion on the dash threes? Is there any objection to the dash three amendments? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll carry House Bill 4035 over to tomorrow. Close the work session. Open work session on House Bill 4068.
Chair, members of the committee, you have a recent arrival of the Dash 2 amendments in front of you. This bill would allow persons with only one violation of misdemeanor conviction for marijuana possession or one court diversion for marijuana possession to apply for concealed firearm permit regardless of the conviction was in Oregon or outside the state. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 2 amendments basically clarifying language as it relates to this whole particular area. I have to admit I have not thoroughly gone through them, but I've had several conversations with Jessica Minifee downstairs in Legislative Council over the clunkiness of the current statute, and this is an attempt to clean it up. These amendments also came from Representative Thatcher, so you may want to consider adopting them, and then we'll put the bill over tomorrow for...
Yeah, thank you.
We do not have the paperwork.
And part of the issue came up where there are people that had that conviction prior to 1973, where I believe this clarifies that they can be covered under this bill. Okay, so we have the Dash 2 amendments to put into House Bill 4068, and if those are in, then we will roll the bill over till tomorrow so the paperwork can catch up. Is there any objection to the Dash 2 amendments?
I think we actually probably move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 4068.
Is there any further discussion? Yes.
So we're not doing the Dash 1s at all, or this supersedes?
Yeah,
Chair, members of the committee, there was one more change made to the Dash 2. I guess it was a technical mistake, but
okay.
I've been told.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Is there any objections to the Dash 2 amendments being put in House Bill 4068? So ordered, and we'll close the work session. The bill will be rolled over to tomorrow. I will announce I am not moving House Bill 4089 to a vote, so that bill will not be moved further. The next item on the agenda is clear down the document.
I understand, Mr. Chair. I wish that the opportunity to move the bill had been there.
Okay,
I really would like to see that gone down.
And I know there's others feel that way too.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes, we're take a recess, a brief recess. Wait. House Bill 4143, open a work session.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, you've heard House Bill 4143 before on February 6th. This is your Cypre bill, and it orders it allows the courts to direct all unclaimed damages and class action lawsuits to be deposited into the Oregon Rainy Day Fund instead of back to the plaintiff. You have before you the -4 amendments and the -9 amendments. The -4s specify the measure applies only to class action lawsuits where the judgment has been entered after the effective date, and the -9s establish the legal aid supplementary account and specify that the funds should flow into that account for use by legal aid. We have the fiscal and revenue statements on those two amendments. They are both indeterminate.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm intending to move both amendments. Mr. Chair, I move the -4 amendments to House Bill 4143.
Representative Barton moves the -4 amendments into House Bill 4143. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Barton.
Mr. Chair, I move the -9 amendments to House Bill 4143.
Representative Barton moves the -9 amendments into House Bill 4143. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4143 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves House Bill 4143 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? We will be doing a roll call vote on this one. Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, we just got the revenue impact, and it's indeterminate, and it says there's no historical information on class action lawsuits and what has been left in an account. Nobody tracks that anywhere?
I don't know. Representative Williamson, do you know? I don't know that. I can't answer that question.
Aaron Knott can answer that question.
Who can?
Aaron Knott.
Oh, Aaron Knott. Mr. Knott, could you come up and answer that for us?
Chair Barker, for the record, my name is Aaron Knott. I'm the Legislative Director for the Attorney General in the Department of Justice. And in response to that question, we were asked earlier if there's any mechanism to track class action lawsuits on the state or federal level. We queried OGIN. We look basically everywhere that we can think of. And class action lawsuits are by nature highly episodic. You have years where there are pretty much none, and then you have years where there are several and they're significant. But there does not appear to be a specific designation anywhere within the OGIN system that teases that information out. I can assure you we made every effort.
Okay, thank you. In other words, he doesn't know either.
Follow up, if I may.
Yeah.
Thanks, Aaron. So the terminology used, some years it's significant, some years there's none. So how do you know there's years of significance if there's no way to track it?
Chair Barker, Representative Cameron, that really, I think, is going to be best answered just because we've had lawyers that have been around for a long time within the Department of Justice and elsewhere in the legal community of specific recollection of class action lawsuits that have come through. Class actions can be very small, they can be very large, and some of the very large ones stick in the brain a bit. So, again, we can tell you anecdotally that they come through, but we can't give you a sense of either their exact frequency or their exact size.
One last thing. So if this bill passes, will you have to implement some sort of tracking system?
Chair Barker, Representative Cameron, no, we wouldn't. Part of why Cypre tends to end up in the places that it does. It's not a thing you can set a clock to necessarily, but every time it would come in, it would be clearly recognizable because there'd be a statutory designation that if you had that type of an award, a Cypre award, the remainder, what went uncollected, would automatically go into the pool that is designated by the legislature. So going forward, that wouldn't be an issue. It's just, in the past, the way that the law is structured now, if there was a class action lawsuit with a remainder, in Oregon law, and we're one of two states that are like this, there's nowhere designated for that remainder to go. So there wouldn't be any reason to track those separately. There isn't any statutory mechanism governing a specific result. So when those came in, they would just sail by. There would be no reason to track them.
You don't mind if I keep going here a minute?
Please, go ahead.
Well, so the money comes in and goes into a trust account someplace? Is that how it works?
Chair Barker, Representative Cameron, how it would work here would
be... No, excuse me. How it currently works.
Okay. I understand. Thank you for the clarification. Under existing law, So you have a class action lawsuit, and it designates a class, right? And say 50% of it is collected, meaning 50% of the individuals that were identified as in that class actually showed up, provided address information, filled out the form, and sent it back. So with the remaining 50% right now under existing law, typically that has no special designation, so it would go back to the subject of the class action, what we would call the tortfeasor.
So I'm trying to get... Where was it before it went back? Was it in the possession of the state in some way?
Well, Chair Barker, Representative Cameron, it took the form of a judgment initially. The court would find that a tortfeasor had X amount of liability. They would try to pay out as many members of the class as they could from that. And that's a legal judgment against them at that point. So they're obligated to that money, but then they would get the remainder back after they'd made every attempt to locate members of the class. So there's never going to be a fund or any sort of a set-aside under current law. It's just handled within the judicial system in terms of how judgments are handed out.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I need some clarification here. If we're setting up a new account through the Dash 9s, should this not maybe go through Ways and Means? I don't know.
We don't have there's not a specific amount of budget, so I don't know. And all the money would go to legal aid with the Dash 9.
Yeah, and Chair Barker, Representative Olson, the only point I would make on that is it's not going to cost the state anything in terms of a typical Ways and Means style allocation, as far as I know.
Representative Hicks?
Me?
Yes. Sorry.
Now that we've shifted the direction of the theoretical damages to legal aid, I hope nobody thinks that we've solved or even come close to solving or even done anything serious about solving the funding problems within legal aid. This is not going to cover the gap. So, also, I filed notice of a possible minority report.
Okay, thank you. Let the record show that Representative Hicks has filed notice of possible minority report.
Motion.
It's
out of order.
No.
We haven't even voted yet.
I think it's on the table, but
he's giving notice. He hasn't, yeah, and that just says that he's reserving the option. He hasn't actually done it yet. Please.
Thank you. I think the original concept here of putting the CyPRAE funding in rainy day fund was a really sound and good concept. But as a former legal aid attorney myself, who worked with the Oregon Law Foundation as board president and worked with the Campaign for Equal Justice, I'm really keenly aware of how difficult it is to get funding for those crucial services and what a good value the services are to our community, at what modest rates the attorneys for that nonprofit work. And I admire and I'd like to congratulate people on this committee and Tobias Reed and others who have evolved the concept to a place where we are currently going to be voting. I think it's a really sound use of resources, and it's going to do a lot of good in our community. And I'd like to thank Jennifer Williamson, who's had a real leadership role in this also.
Representative Krieger,
Now, Mr. Chair, it's been stated already, but I wanted to elaborate just a little bit. There's several people here who have supported legal aid and in the past voted for more money for legal aid, worked within the Ways and Means process to get more money for me. It never came to be a priority. Sometimes it doesn't get to be a priority until we get taken into court for not doing something, and all of a sudden, just like having legal counsel, it's a right of somebody. At some point, we're going to have to prioritize our spending. I'm not certain, as you say, how many dollars this is actually going to generate for legal aid, but it's still going to fall far short.
Thank you. Okay. We have the two amendments, the fours and the nines, into House Bill 4143. Is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Cameron.
No.
Representative Hicks?
No.
Representative Weinberg?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Williamson?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger?
No.
Chair Barton?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I just want to be clear to the record that Representative Hicks served a notice of possible minority report. Thank you.
Thank you. Further business. Thank you, committee. We're adjourned.